This is XTP Media.
Eventfire Solutions is proud to support Extended. You can find us at eventfiresolutions.co.uk. Enjoy the programme.
You're listening to Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media and Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson and welcome to episode 44 of Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station. Joining me today is Executive Editor of Global Aviation Resource, Gareth Stringer. Gareth, how are you?
Oh, we're in the same room together.
At the same time, can you believe it? We've got to take a photo.
It's a tent.
It is the press tent. And in the background, we can hear the dulcet tones of the Spirit of Great Britain. What else have we got going on here?
Yeah, Vulcan's taxiing, Sea Vixen has started, so it's a bit of a classic jet fest for a few minutes, I think. Sea Vixen's rolling, actually.
Well, we're going to go outside and have a look at this display, because I've seen it a few days ago, and it's one not to miss. So we'll go and have a look at this, and we'll be back shortly. So we've just seen the Vulcan take off, Gareth. Very impressive, as always. She's coming back around shortly. What are you looking forward to today?
Well, when she does come back round, we've got this spectacular formation, Peter, with her, the Sea Vixen, and the two Norwegian Vampires who've just displayed. Yeah. That's unique. You know, we're never going to see that again, obviously. So very much looking forward to that. Sea Vixen on its own, spectacular and so appropriate here as well, obviously. Yeah. And I have to say, in a naval sense, the French Navy, the Super Etendards and the Dassault Rafales are spectacular, always spectacular.
Looking for those. Now, I got around the show a little bit earlier, got to speak to some of the pilots, some of the air crews, so we'll have a little listen to what they had to say. Now, I got the chance to speak to Commander Ayres, otherwise known as Wings, who's in charge of today's display, and I asked him what we can look forward to seeing and what his role in Air Day is. I'm with Commander Ayres, otherwise known as Wings. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much. We've got a fantastic day ahead on Saturday. The weather is looking wonderful.
Promising.
A little bit of high-level cloud early in the morning, but gradually brightening up, improving to clear skies by lunchtime and beyond.
Right, so what can we hope to see then in the display?
Well, an enormous variety both on the ground and in the air. And with this year, the theme is the 75th anniversary of the Royal Naval Air Station at Yeovilton, combined with the 100th anniversary of the Westland Aircraft Company getting their first contract for building a short seaplane for the Royal Navy 100 years ago. With those primary themes in mind, we've also got a number of other commemorations, which include two Victoria Crosses for the Royal Naval Air Service back in 1915, the 70th anniversary of VJ Day, and the British Pacific Fleet's enormous effort to, alongside the US Navy, to finish the war. The 75th anniversary of the Battle of Taranto, of course, represented by the iconic swordfish, which is flying this year.
My father was a telegraphist air gunner. He sat in the back of those. Sadly, he's no longer with us. Yeah. But I used to come here as a kid. It's great to see the Mark I flying.
It is, and the tags were an extraordinary bunch.
Yeah. He had many a story. Yeah. He had many a story.
Of course, it's the 75th anniversary of Taranto. As I've mentioned, the 70th anniversary of VJ Day. It's also the 65th anniversary of the start of the Battle of Korea, or the War in Korea, and that's represented by partially the CFAR, although the CFAR didn't take a terribly prominent part because it was being replaced at the time, but by Fireflies and Sea Furies. But we do have our own Sea Fury, sadly not flying this year because of the engine incident that's still being examined from last year. But we do have a fantastic FB-11 variant on static display.
Yep.
And accompanied by that, and applicable to the Korean War, we've got the Norwegian vintage MiG-15 coming.
Yeah, that's looking very exciting. Yeah,
absolutely. And both the MiG and the Sea Fury will be displayed together in two different parts of the static park throughout the day, with the MiG departing briefly to do a flying display and then returning back to alongside the, or probably just in front of, the Sea Fury, given that's its rightful place.
Yeah.
After Lieutenant Hoagy Carmichael, of course, shot down a MiG-15 from the piston-engine Sea Fury. I think on the ground, even if one was distracted or the flying display didn't happen at all, then there's plenty on the ground to be looking at. We've got everything from a static hot air balloon all the way up to an E3 and a C-17. We've got the Royal Navy's bird control unit. This 50th anniversary here was set up at Royal Naval Air Station Lossiemouth to control an enormous bird problem on the coast up in Scotland, and then was transferred in 72, I think, down to Yeovilton and Royal Naval Air Station Culdrose as well. And we now breed our own peregrine falcons at Yeovilton for both bird control units here and Culdrose, and they will be on display. And they're, of course, we can guarantee the stock because we breed them ourselves, and they're wonderful specimens. We've got engineering displays, industry displays. Obviously, fairground rides, plenty to eat and drink. Obviously, remember to bring your suntan lotion because of the weather. There's a Royal Marine Band performing,
the field gun crew,
and it's the HMS Heron, or Royal Naval Air Station field gun team that won the Brickwood Trophy recently down at Portsmouth, which is a tri-service event, but the Heron team won. Gosh, there's so much more. There's simulators, there are armed forces recruiting stands, and an enormous static park with a large number of aircraft provided on by Augusta Westland to represent their 100-year history as well, in addition to all the naval aircraft and foreign displays as well.
And what's your role on the day? What's the role that you undertake on the day?
My title on the day is Flying Display Director.
Yeah.
That is complemented by the event organizer, which is my colleague, the executive officer. So he runs everything on the crowd side.
Yeah.
I run everything on the air side and make sure that all the flying displays are validated, pre-audited, deconflicted, and that the whole day runs smoothly. And where there are adjustments required, whether it be weather or unserviceability, we keep the flow of the air display going. And ensure that interlopers don't come into our airspace, that we sanitise the airspace, especially for the larger displays, such as the Spanish display team and the Red Arrows, and the more dynamic jet displays. So it's a full air traffic service, deconfliction, coordination, adjustment, refinement.
You're going to be very busy, aren't you?
Well, I'll be chained to the air traffic control tower, enjoying the show, of course, but listening out. And obviously there are pleasure flights, helicopter pleasure flights, which I mentioned. Clearly we need to deconflict that. We've also got a commercial unmanned air system operator, which will be flying just in front of the crowd, but below the height of the aircraft.
Footage,
and and it's good. It's introducing modern technology, but clearly needs to be deconflicted. There are times when that's on the ground, as well as the pleasure flights are on the ground for certain displays, but other times those are carrying on in parallel with the with the displays.
Yeah. Well, we wish you every success. I'm sure it is. We're very excited about this year's show.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Enjoy the day.
I next had the opportunity to speak to Lieutenant Colonel Gelders from the Belgian Air Force.
And can you tell us a little bit about the aircraft that we're looking at now?
So since 2 years, we've introduced the new helicopter, NH90, into the Belgian Defence Forces. We have two versions for the moment. We have a tactical version, DTH, and the maritime version, the NFH.
Okay.
The tactical version.
Which one is do we have here?
This is the tactical version, as you see. So they are not co-located. They are the NFH is based in Coxyde Air Base next to the coast, primarily for support to the Navy and for SAR, search and rescue. While we obviously are in support of the land forces.
Yeah. And what's the capabilities of the aircraft? What's its performance?
Well, it's a 11-ton. Helicopter.
She's good looking.
She's good looking.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
Yeah.
We can take 20 people on board.
Yeah.
16 in a tactical environment with equipment and so on. And it has an endurance of about 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which gives us a range of about 600 miles.
Wow. Okay. That's quite good for a helicopter of that size.
Indeed. Yeah. It's a huge step. With respect to what we had before. So before we were flying Augusta helicopters, the light ones. So it's a huge huge step in the good direction.
Yeah, and the aircraft is relatively new to the Air Force. How's it settling in?
It was quite a challenge because we were stepping from a classic or analog cockpit to a full glass cockpit. It's also a fly-by-wire system. It's a full composite helicopter. We have to use it in a new role, what we are not used to, and so on and so on. So it was quite a challenge, but we started with a limited amount of very motivated people.
Yeah.
And now, 2 years later, we are declared initial operational.
Yeah.
And if everything goes as expected, we will be full operational next year.
Okay. And where are you based? Where's the aircraft based?
The home base is Beauvechere Air Base, not too far from Brussels.
Yeah.
It was formerly a F-16 base, and now it's mainly the main helicopter base in Belgium, as well as a training base, fixed wing.
And did you fly direct? Did you fly direct into Yeovilton?
We flew via Coxyde.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we had to swap helicopters because we came with the Romeo November 8. This is the Romeo November 5.
Yep.
But unfortunately, we had a small technical problem and we had to swap helicopters in Coxyde.
Well, the aircraft looks absolutely perfect, so you wouldn't notice.
No. The only difference is that The 8 yesterday was equipped with floatabilities.
Oh, okay.
So if you see, there is some space to plug in floatabilities.
Okay.
Unfortunately, this one is not equipped, but not a problem.
What's the big dome on the front of the aircraft?
What you see, the big the black part is a weather radar.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a very capable weather radar. And normally, you see the small nose just up. Normally, between the weather radar and the nose, it should be a piloting FLIR, forward-looking infrared, but it's not installed at this moment. And it is connected with a helmet-mounted side display, so the pilot gets the image directly on his visor.
Okay. And what's she like to fly in?
Sorry?
How is she like to fly?
She's absolutely adorable to fly. Yeah. It's a very fast helicopter as well. Yeah. The cruising speed, max cruising speed, is 162 knots, which is rather high for a helicopter.
And a big helicopter.
It's a medium-sized helicopter, but with the flying characteristics of the small ones, they're very agile, very maneuverable.
Yeah.
As said before, very powerful, so hot and high is With regard to the Augusta helicopter, it's no issue at all.
Right.
It has the same engines, in fact, as the Merlin, but only two instead of three.
Yeah.
The RTM 332.
Right, okay.
And I think it's the same engine as well as the UK Apache.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow, didn't know that either. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming to Yeovilton today, and thank you for joining us on the programme.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I'm with NASA from 338 Squadron, the Royal Norwegian Air Force, and we're in front of a F-16. First, I saw your name tag and it said NASA. Tell me about that first.
Well, I like to say to people that I used to be an astronaut, but then I'm lying. And then I tell them that I tried to explore the upper limits of the F-16 and I almost went to space. That's also a lie. And then it actually has just to do with my performance of the jet at one time.
Right.
And it stands for no apparent situational awareness.
Now, that's not great for a pilot.
No, it's not great, but it sounds cool when you're not saying it like that, though.
Right, okay. So whereabouts are you based?
Ørland, Norway, just central Norway, close to Trondheim.
Right, okay. And we've got an F-16 here. Is this your aircraft?
This is, well, it's not mine, personally.
You don't own it, though.
No, I don't own it, but yeah, this
you
is
fly
the,
this aircraft.
I fly this aircraft.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the aircraft and its capabilities.
It's a F-16. It's getting old. She's about 30, closing up on 40 years old
now. She looks great, though.
She looks great. She's, if you ask me, she's the best looking aircraft that's ever made.
Yeah.
At least of the modern jets.
Yeah.
The Spitfire is... obviously a very good looking aircraft still. It's a multi-role fighter. It can do both air-to-air, air-to-ground.
And does the Norwegian Air Force use it in both?
Yes, we do. Day and night. We can drop laser bombs, GPS bombs. We have IR missiles. We have long-range radar missiles.
Okay.
And they're used both day and night, both air-to-air and air-to-ground.
Right, okay. And what's this particular aircraft? She's in a lovely Tiger paint scheme.
Yeah.
Why is she in that paint scheme?
Because 338 Squadron is a part of the NATO Tiger Association.
Yeah.
More or less every country in NATO has one Tiger Squadron.
Yeah.
And 338 Squadron of Norway is that squadron in Norway. So we have three painted jets to honor the Tiger spirit.
Yeah.
And we have to show us off a little bit when we go abroad.
Right.
So we took the Tiger aircraft this time.
Okay. Now, you look like a very young chap. Tell me a little bit about how you managed to get into the cockpit of an F-16.
Well, not that young, but thank you. 27 years old still.
Yeah.
I've used 5 years from when I was 22. 21. We do a very thorough selection, about 1,000 applicants, and there was six of us that got to fly the F-16 in the end.
Right.
So we have about 2 years in Norway on basic flying skill selection.
Yeah.
Then the academy, and then we go 2 years at the Shepherd, Texas, flying the T-6 and the T-38.
Yeah.
And then about 6 months, we go to Tucson in Arizona and fly the F-16 for 6 months before we come back to Norway. So it's about a four-year program to get there.
Now, what's the difference between flying in Arizona and flying in...
obviously, the weather.
Yeah.
We have... Arizona has 360 days of sun and clear skies.
Yeah.
And coming to Norway, and especially middle part of Norway, you are blessed with maybe 30, 40 Sundays a year.
Yeah.
So, the weather, definitely. Snow, ice.
And how's the aircraft perform in poor weather?
Excellent. Yeah. It is it's a dream to fly in any weather. The biggest challenge is for our landings and stuff like that with icy runways, snowy runways. And the Norwegian F-16s have the drag chute in the tail, so we can use if it's very, very slippery on the runways.
Okay.
A lot of crosswind, which it always is, more or less.
Yeah.
Then we have to use the drag chute,
which
helps us a lot.
And then just before I leave you, what's your favourite moment in the F-16?
my first time flying it by myself. There's 5-6 rides with the instructor in the back seat, sitting and breathing down your neck and making you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The first time you get to fly it by yourself, there's nobody watching you, and you just plug full afterburner, 120,000 brake horsepower in your back. It's indescribable.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for coming to Yeovilton today.
No problem, thank you.
Now, I'm with Rod Holmes. Rod, we met this time last year outside the Vulcan tent, of course, Twitter V-Force. Rod, welcome back to Extended.
Yeah, good morning, Peter. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm very good. And we've also got Lindsay with us.
Good morning. You all right?
Yeah, maker of the cookies, I hear.
Yes, the gingerbread V-Force that went down so well at Operation Finningley in March.
Right, okay. Missed out on that one. tell us, guys, we're outside the Vulcan to the Sky tent. She's over the other side. We're looking forward to seeing her display today. How does it feel to be in the last year of seeing this aircraft fly?
I think it's absolutely fantastic. I'm actually really looking forward to this year. I know there's a lot of people upset about it, but I think it's, you know, she's an old girl. She's done her time now.
Yeah.
Let us wash out and let her go out in glory. Oh, hello.
You're not going to get a better sound than that, are you? Well, you might. But
you might do a little bit later on.
Yeah, that's right. Seeing her for the last time. I mean, this time last year, we didn't know we'd see her, did we?
No, not at all. No, this is like an extra year for us. I think everybody should celebrate that fact and enjoy and get to see her wherever they can, really.
Yeah. How much have you seen her so far this year?
I've seen her 3 times so far this year, so that's really good. Obviously, up at Donington, Doncaster even when we were up there, superb.
Okay, and plans for the rest of the season?
I'm going to try and fit in Riet if I can, Eastbourne, Bournemouth, going to try and get back up to Doncaster as well to see her in the hangar as well,
Okay. And Lindsay, what's your interest in the Vulcan and XH-558?
I'm an aerospace engineer by trade, and she just is such a symbol, really, to me of what British engineering was. And you look back to the 50s, and it was such a cutting edge time. People really pushing the envelope of technologies and what was available, what they could do. And you know, the fact that she's still flying, you know, 55 years old, is just, you know, a tremendous testament to what the Avro team did. And you know, I'll be very, very sad to see her land at Finningley at the final day, but it's been a wonderful tribute to British engineering, really, for me.
it has been. Tell us a little bit about your job then.
I've worked at a place called CTG, we're part of United Technologies, a big global corporation. We make secondary high lift actuation control surface components, sort of flap and slat shafts.
Okay. So, interesting job, and glad to see that we're getting more women into the industry. We do have women who listen to the show who want to get into the aerospace sector. What advice would you give them?
I would say do it. I've worked in the industry for 8 years, and it's fascinating. I've worked with some brilliant people, learned some fantastic things. And actually, I've seen, particularly in the latest, there have been more and more women coming into the office.
Yeah.
And I think that's people shouldn't think, oh, it's a sexist industry. It's not at all.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I get on a bit of a rant about is that whenever you see engineering in the media, it's always hard hat, high vis, big clumpy shoes. I sit in an office.
Yeah.
My colleagues, we use computers. We simulate things. We draw things on CAD. It's not. It's far more than the media present it as, and it's and just because you've got an engineering degree in one field doesn't mean you can't work in another.
Okay, so coming back to the Vulcan, what's your favourite bit of the display?
All of it.
How about you, Rod?
To me, it's always a takeoff for me. I just love the sound of those 201s winding up to full power and then wallop, off she goes. Fantastic. It's just a sound that you'll never, ever get repeated again.
Okay. Well, I had the opportunity to speak to somebody who was a senior navigator and has XH-558 in their logbook. So we'll just have a listen to what Anthony Lloyd has to say.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm in Fallowfields, I'm in the delightful Oxfordshire countryside, and I'm with Anthony Lloyd. Anthony, welcome to Extended.
Hello there, it's good to be here. Nice to see you again, Peter.
It's great to be here. I haven't been here for 4 or 5 years. Spent some delightful evenings in the restaurant here and stayed in your fabulous rooms. But I discovered something a year or two ago about you that I never knew. And that is that you have crewed XH558, the Spirit of Great Britain. Tell us a little bit about your career, Anthony.
Okay, well, I was expelled from school in the sixth form, and for my parents thought, well, he needs a bit of discipline, this young man, so the Air Force was it, and so I went for air crew selection. They were only recruiting navigators at the time, so I became a navigator, and having completed a tour on Canberras, my first tour on Canberras in Cyprus, I returned to Waddington in Lincolnshire. For a tour on the V-Force. Prior to actually joining the squadron at Wellington, we of course did the OCU, Operational yeah. Conversion Unit, and that was at, well, now it's called Robin Hood Airport, but it yeah. was then RAF Finningley near Doncaster. And the very first Vulcan that was in my logbook as a crew member was XH-558, and I guess that was the back end of 1966.
Wow. You've got some wonderful prints on the walls in the hotel. The Vulcan's got a very strong place, I think, in your heart. Tell us a little bit about what your role was and what it was like to fly in that aircraft.
The Vulcan was an amazing airplane. I only wish that I'd been able to pilot a Vulcan, because she accelerated down the runway faster than an E-type Jaguar. There's yeah. memories there, of course, as well. So immense acceleration. This fantastic power to weight ratio. You know, the all-up weight, I think, of the Vulcan fully fueled was something like 400,000 pounds. And she had 200,000 pounds of thrust, something like that, if I remember rightly. Or was it 200 and 100? I can't yeah. remember. But anyway, fantastic power-to-weight ratio. The American B-52 crews were just in awe of our performance. Yeah. So I had some great times with Vulcan. I think the most disappointing of those days was that she had limited hours.
Yeah.
And so we could only fly once a week. So it was a five-hour sortie, five-hour briefing and debriefing, 10 hours one day. And frankly, I got bored, and that's the reason I left yeah. the Air Force, because the only Tornado hadn't come in by that stage.
Yeah.
So there was no other option but another tour on Vulcans, playing
yeah.
Uckers or Ludo, as it yeah. was in the crew room. I mean, just mindless. So great shame. But I went around the world in Vulcan. I was the lead navigator, taking 8 Vulcans around the world. Fantastic experiences, great fun. I just loved every inch of the Vulcan, despite yeah. the fact that she smelt, despite the fact that you couldn't get out.
Yeah, it was very cramped, you know, wasn't it?
It was very cramped. I was a navigator yeah. plotter, so yeah. I had an air electronics officer on my right. That was a guy called John Sheath, and on my left, a nav radar using this obscure bit of radar equipment. And that was Ian Plested. The three of us were almost shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
But, you know, one learnt that. I mean, that was an easy thing to overcome, and one just learnt to work together as a great crew.
Yeah.
And it all added to the party afterwards in the bar.
Now, the 60s were a challenging time politically. The Cold War was probably at its strongest. What did that feel like as crew? Dave Gedhill, a month or two ago, said to us, sometimes they went on sorties out to meet the bears and ever wondered whether, you know, they would be coming home to anything. What did that feel like to you?
Well, obviously, it was fairly tense times. We spent a lot of time in the vault studying targets in the USSR, as was then. I mean, I think one of the interesting things, and I hope I can say this in hindsight, was one of our targets had a diversion airfield to in what's now Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And I can remember going through the plans for this target time and time and time and time again. And I came up about 300 miles short. We didn't have enough fuel to actually get to Afghanistan by about 300 miles. So I spoke to the squadron leader navigator, I can't remember his name, who was in charge of the vault. And I said, "Sir, this is this is impossible." And he looked at me in the eyes and he said, "Well, the Vulcan has incredible glide characteristics."
300 miles, yeah. Good luck, chaps. And what other stories do you have of those days, Anthony? I mean, wonderful aircraft, and they've done a fabulous job now.
Mm.
What memories does seeing the Spirit of Great Britain bring up for you now?
Memories, I mean, that around the world trip was just extraordinary. To take eight Vulcans around the world and see the awe in the eyes and faces of, for example, the B-52 crews in Guam.
Yeah.
You know, with their great lumbering eight engine, 64,000 pounds of thrust, 400,000 pound all up weight. Yeah, the Vulcan was 200,000 pounds all up weight with, 80,000 pounds of thrust. And they just, the look is just still stays in my memory. She was loved wherever you went. People were always fascinated that you were running on nuclear deterrent at the time.
Yeah. Now, you're a great supporter of the Trust. We're hopefully going to see the aircraft fly a few more times this year. What would you like to see, I suppose, as the lasting legacy for that aircraft and for that whole type of aircraft?
What I would like to see is, I think, what Robert Fleming and the Trust is planning to do with her, and that is to make her or turn her into an area of engineering excellence.
Yeah.
You know, those are skills that we have, I think, become short of in this country, and I think to have young students the opportunity of taking apart, putting together an aeroplane like that is just incredible. That's an amazing legacy, and I think, much as it would be sad to see her stopping flying, because that has inspired millions, I would think, to see her still continuing to inspire, albeit a smaller number of people, I think it's an amazing. How many years has she been flying now?
Is it, gosh, you know, 30,
40? Well, more than that. More than that, you know.
Yeah, got to be 50
almost. Yeah. And you know, she's going to live on for decades more, and I think that's an incredible legacy.
Right. Now, we're, as I said, sitting in the delightful lounge in your hotel. Tell us a little bit about Fallowfields, because it's an amazing part of the world. There's lots of people who listen to the show in and around this area. What can they find out about coming to stay at Fallowfields?
Well, it's lovely to give the opportunity to give me a plug. We're a 10-bedroom country house hotel with a chef who is cooking at the top level. He's one of the top 200 chefs in the country.
Yeah, the food is stunning.
Three AA rosettes. You come here for the food. The locality is wonderful. There is so much to do, so much to see. Oxfordshire is a glorious county. We're family run. It's very friendly. It's professional yet relaxed and friendly, I think, is the way to sum stuff, with incredible food.
It is fantastic. I remember it well from staying here many, many evenings on business, but it turned into pleasure for me. So, Anthony, where can we find out about you online?
Well, our website is fallowfields.com. I'm on Twitter, at Fallowfields UK. We have a Facebook page, Fallowfields Hotel. Plenty of online presence, and love to chat to people, particularly those who are enthusiastics on particularly XH-558, but the Vulcan in general.
Well, if you're very lucky, Anthony might be here if you stay here. So, Anthony, thank you very much for having us.
My great pleasure, Peter. Thank you.
So we heard from Anthony there. Rod, back to Twitter V-Force. What plans you got for the rest of this year?
Yeah, it's big plans ahead. We've got the Instagram page, which is going from strength to strength now, where people are automatically uploading onto the website. We're doing live streaming via the new Periscope app that's now up, which is absolutely fantastic. At the moment, Dave's working on a new system for live streaming, so we can actually stream direct onto our website. Instead of it being just a mobile phone app, we'd actually get things straight onto your screen as we're shooting stuff. So yeah, things are going from strength to strength, looking really, really good.
Well, Rod, all the very best. Thanks for coming back on the show, and we look forward to seeing her perform.
Fantastic, certainly am.
Bill, thanks for joining the show once again.
Hello again, Gareth.
This is a Yeovilton special. Now that we know that this big 558 adventure is actually coming to an end, I guess each of these is a last, isn't it? Does it feel like that?
Up to this point, we've been so busy that actually there's no room or time to think about it. I think the first time I began to feel some sense of it's approaching an end was when I knew that I was going to display at React next weekend, including the flypast with the red arrows, and I suddenly thought, actually, that's going to be quite a big day. So you have to push it just the back of your mind, do the job. But yeah, I'm sure as the year goes on, we will all get more and more emotional, and it'll be tears and hankies and everything.
Now, you've had a busy couple of days, and talking of flypasts, you performed one today. You were at the controls of 558 with Sea Vixen and two Norwegian vampires. Just tell us a little bit about those. It was wonderful to see from our perspective.
It was very exciting because we hadn't had the chance to brief face-to-face with anybody else participating until about an hour before we had to climb the airplane this morning. It was a good brief, so we ended up behind the Sea Vixen, which is an interesting airplane because it has a small Dutch roll, which we'd been pre-briefed on, but it's kind of just corkscrewing ever so gently in front of you. So that's a little bit off-putting. And as I've probably told you before, the Vulcan has a lot of overtake capability, but we cannot slow down. So we tiptoed up behind it. Lovely view. How often do you fly behind three aeroplanes with tail booms? I hope the crowd enjoyed it most of all, but I really hope there's some good pictures from the sky van looking down on the formation. Great, another great treat.
And finally, Phil O'Dell was at the controls for the show today. You've been off to Penarth, done Swansea as well. How did he do?
He wasn't bad for a chief test pilot of Rolls Royce and a Jaguar pilot, but no, Pod is an absolute delight to fly with. A much, much, much more competent pilot than me. So, it's just nice to fly with him and watch what he does and why he does it. No, great, really, really good pilot. Great display.
Okay, look, thanks for your time again. I know there'll be plenty more in the months to come before it all wraps up. But thank you once again.
Yeah, no, we'll talk to you again. Don't forget the people's mosquito.
We need the mosquito back as well. That could be your next project.
Well, I fingers crossed as ever. It's bubbling away. People just need to become aware of it and get behind it in the same way they did with the Vulcan. We need a mosquito flying in air shows.
We do.
Nice talking to you, Gareth. Take care.
Event Fire Solutions is an independent fire and rescue service providing both preventative and reactive emergency services across the UK. As well as our main event management, we provide the support and equipment to deliver a safe and risk-free event. From fire appliances to medical vehicles, our fully trained and accredited staff will make your event a true success. If you need risk-related advice, investigation, medical or fire training, then we can deliver this for you. From the office to the airfield, we have the experience and the accreditation and most of all the skills to make your workplace event safe and risk-free. To find out more of how we can help you, look us up at eventfiresolutions.co.uk.
I'm with Lieutenant Colonel Christensen. Welcome to Yeovilton.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you here on Extended on our show, but we're more delighted to have you and your team here. Tell us what aircraft you've bought.
We bought the Boeing C-17, formerly made by McDonnell Douglas, but now it's Boeing.
Right, okay. And she's parked up in all her glory just behind us. Tell us a bit about what that aircraft does for the US Air Force. What's its role and what squadron is it from?
Okay, well, we're from the 315th Airlift Wing in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
And the C-17 is an aircraft capable of carrying troops as well as cargo worldwide. It's air refuelable, which means basically we can leave the United States and arrive anywhere at any time and bring anything.
Right, okay. And did you come over in one hop to the show, or did you stage?
Are you trying to get into the state secrets now? But we did manage to fly all the way over the Atlantic from New York, actually. We stopped in New York for a medevac mission.
Right, okay. And what was the flight like?
It was lovely. It's great weather and smooth. And, you know, a lot of the airliners are always looking for a smooth ride, but we just we care about just getting to our destination. We don't mind a few bumps along the way.
Okay. And you're here at Yeovilton today to help us celebrate 75 years. The aircraft, as I say, is behind us. What type of aircraft is it? What model is it? And tell us a bit about its performance.
Okay. It's the C-17 is the Globemaster 3. So there were the Globemaster and there was a Globemaster 2. So it's it follows that generation of aircraft. It's capable of carrying, I think you call them lorries, we call them trucks, but tractor trailers. We can put about two side by side, something like that, to give you an idea of what it can carry.
Yeah.
And it can carry over 100 paratroopers.
Yeah.
And if it has the medevac mission, which we're doing today, then it's capable of carrying ambulatory persons as well as people who need to be in gurneys. Yeah. And it can even do an ICU, I believe. Critical care.
Yep.
So we basically can have a flying hospital.
Right. Okay. I think the UK versions recently medevaced some civilians from Africa to here. So I think most of us are quite familiar, having seen that on the news. What's the crew on the aircraft? How's the aircraft crew?
Well, the minimum crew is three.
Yep.
A pilot, a co-pilot, and a loadmaster.
Right.
But depending on the mission, we may need more people to help out.
Right. Okay.
And particularly with the medevac mission, we definitely have a support crew of a mission commander for the medical portion, as well as nurses, and occasionally, depending on the mission, we'll have an actual doctor on board.
Can you tell me a little bit about the 315th?
The 315th Airlift Wing is based in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are a sister wing with the active duty, which is the 437th Airlift Wing.
Right.
And we work together with the same equipment as reservists, which we are, with the active duty portion. So it's a lot like the Royal Air Force. I think they have the reserve component and the active component.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming over to Yeovilton, and we hope you enjoy your stay.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and nice to meet you.
Gareth, we've just seen Commander Gok just do the ceasefire display. We've got the swordfish to come. I had the opportunity to speak to Chris before the display. This is what he had to say. I'm with Lieutenant Commander Chris Gok, who's the commander of the Royal Navy Historic Flight. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, how are you?
I'm very well. Can I first add my congratulations to the award of the Air Force Cross?
I'm still very surprised and humbled by obviously receiving such an award. I was just doing my job on the day, as my training would have done. So,
Well, you saved a wonderful aircraft and probably many lives, so thank you from all of us and from all of our listeners.
No, there was never any lives at risk, but the aircraft will be flying.
Well, yours alone was life enough, but an amazing
feat of bravery. Thank you very much for that. Let's talk about the last year. The last time I met you was in this hangar. I think you just received some bad news about one of the engines. But since then, what a remarkable turnaround. You've got the Mark 1 Swordfish out. And of course, our other Swordfish sitting behind us isn't looking in too bad shape either. So congratulations. What's it been like this year?
I know it's been a sort of a progressive year. Last year, obviously, we were expecting the first engine to come. It took a little bit longer to arrive, and when it did arrive, it didn't work quite correctly. We're all through that now, and we're back into the aircraft flying. We've got sort of just over 9 hours into flying her, and she's ready for the air show on Saturday, which is beautiful. We're doing a few more engine inspections, obviously, as we would expect, and we're hoping the second engine will come sometime at the end of the year, and then hopefully we'll have two up by the end of the year.
That will be an amazing sight to see two Swordfish in the air.
Oh, yeah. It's been a long time coming. I think it was 99-ish was, I think, the last time we had a pair up, but it's not in recent memory.
Yeah. And how's the Sea Fury? Is she doing well? When can we expect to maybe see her back?
Well, the actual Royal Navy Historic Flight military registered Sea Fury is almost ready to fly. We're just waiting for the outcome of what happened at Caldrose. There's a interim report coming out shortly and what the initial findings, but we still haven't worked out exactly what was was the trigger for the engine failure.
Right.
So that is still ongoing. So the aircraft itself is being repaired, should be flying next year. The long pole in the tent is the engine. They're starting to look in. We found a new engine for it, because obviously you can't just go and buy a 54 litre 2,500 horsepower engine anywhere. We want a very specific one. We've hopefully found one now. We're breaking it down to see how good she is, and then it's a case of, if all the bits are there, it's quite a quick turn. If it's not quite all there, you have to go and find the bits to put it there. So we are still hoping that she'll be up for next year.
Okay. And what's this season looking like from the Historic Flight's perspective?
Well, the key thing for us is obviously reliability of getting aircraft out to shows. And as has been aware, that the engines have been the flavour for us for a while. Getting the confidence to maintain them running. We're not going to put an aircraft into the air that's not ready to go. So we have a very progressive build-up approach, and we have obviously a lot of expertise in the engineering authorities that go along with it. We now have Rolls-Royce helping us out as well with advice, and that's been one of the key things that the engineering department, the TAA, has brought along with him. So that kind of extra bit is allowing us to build for the future. So we're in a progressive stage. Obviously 14 wasn't a great year, unfortunately, but 15 is now starting to get going. I would like to start a little bit earlier, but that's the way it worked out, and here we are now. We're ready to go forward and build.
Okay, and what about Lieutenant Commander Gott? What are you flying these days?
I've been very lucky. Since joining in 2003, I've been lucky. I've sort of fallen into the Seahawk when the Seahawk went, and then dropped into the Sea Fury, then the Seahawk came on serviceable. Sea Fury came on serviceable, then I managed to get back in the Seahawk. I've now managed to get into the Swordfish for the first time, so I've been here since 2003. Finally, 12 years, I got into the Swordfish, which is a delightful aircraft. And then on Air Day, I'm also going to be fortunate enough to fly the Seafire as well. So, so that's one of Kennet Aviation's aircraft, and the owners kindly let us utilise it for the day. So I'll be utilising that. I'll be a sort of a military pilot on duty, flying to military rules, but in that aircraft. It's going to be wonderful.
I've not seen that aircraft fly. What's it like to fly compared to the Sea Fury?
It's without doubt. The Sea Fury has many developments on it, so
the technology is very different, isn't it?
Very different, but it's a delightful aircraft to fly. She's fast, she's agile, she's manoeuvrable. She's a lot louder than the Sea Fury is, ironically, probably because you've got a 2,000 horsepower engine with it's no exhaust and just stacks that come out pretty well in front of you. The Sea Fury has a 2,500 horsepower engine that's a little bit further and has some exhaust on it. Handling wise, it's a lovely aeroplane to fly. Both of them are lovely. A little bit more pitch sensitive in the Seafire, but it's a delightful aircraft. To think, what the people are flying with it, whichever aircraft you're in the historic area, the privilege to sit and operate them is beyond belief.
Well, Lieutenant Commander Gott, thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing your display.
Pleasure, Peter. Look forward to another day.
Fantastic display again.
he's a great guy. He's a very down-to-earth individual. He went through a lot last year. You know him quite well as well. He's gone out. He's done another absolutely fantastic display there. How does one come back from something like he had last year in Caldrose?
I think I wonder whether it's maybe we think it's really traumatic.
Yeah,
this is what they prepare for. This is what people like Chris Gotka train for.
Yeah.
So I'm not suggesting for 1 minute it's just sort of water off a duck's back. But
yeah,
I guess you kind of, the training kicked in. He very well deserved medal for what he did.
Yeah.
But he probably just thinks it's all in a day's work. The aircraft's safe. He's safe. The aircraft will be back next year, hopefully. And I think we've seen again here today, as the black cat's butting on our interview, that I think he is probably one of the best warbird display pilots in the UK at the moment.
Yeah, just an absolutely graceful display in that Seafire. Now, we're going to see the Swordfish shortly. I got to talk to Andy Vane, who's the observer in the Swordfish, which, of course, for me is quite something.
Did you manage to contain your excitement?
No. So let's hear what Andy had to say about flying in the Swordfish. Now, I'm with Andy Vanes. Andy, we've met before, but it's great to be back at Yeovilton. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Nice to see you again.
And what's your role with the Historic Flight?
I'm a rear seat crewman for the both the Swordfish. There's LS-326 and 5856, which is now the running Swordfish. So, yeah, we crew the back of the aircraft on the displays and the transits to and from the displays.
Right. You also crew some other aircraft as well, don't you?
Yeah, I'm currently the chief air crewman of 825 Squadron, which is the new Wildcat aircraft. I'm just finishing my conversion course to the Wildcat now from the first digital aircraft I've flown in. So,
okay.
Interesting times.
What's your rank in the Navy then?
I'm a Chief Pit Officer Air Crewman.
Right, okay. Now, you're the closest thing I will ever get to my dad. Do you understand that?
Indeed.
He was a Chief Petty Officer and sat in the back seat.
He was a tag of
the Swordfish. So it's a very unusual thing for me to be here with you, because I wanted to ask him lots of questions after he'd gone. I never asked him enough. But tell me a little bit about what it's like flying in the back of the Swordfish.
It's very different, because there's no you're cocooned in an aircraft when you fly helicopters. Yeah. And I flew in jet streams some years ago. And it's a really odd feeling to be able to sort of see the outside world with nothing between you and terra firma. It's quite interesting, really. And and the wind and the buffeting of the aircraft when you're flying is quite extreme, really. It's quite brutal, if that's a good word to use.
Yeah. Even though she doesn't fly very fast, it's pretty. As Dad said, it was not a comfortable environment.
No. It's a one small seat, and you basically wedge yourself into the seat. And flying with the other crews, we tend to share the navigation from the middle cockpit to the rear cockpit.
Do you sit rear or
normally in the rear?
Okay.
But if we are in a long transit, we'll sometimes swap over.
Okay.
And just purely because the middle cockpit is a bit more sort of benign rather than the rear cockpit, where it's trying to take your head off, really. Yeah, it's quite brutal.
Yeah, okay. And in terms of the displays we're going to see on air day, are you going to be in the aircraft?
Yep, I should be in 5856 on Saturday to do our 6-minute display in front of the public.
Yeah.
This is the first one for this year. So we've done all our practices and run-ups to it, so we're all ready to go.
And you got your certification for the display?
Yes, we have,
Okay.
It's all been done.
Excellent. Now, I was talking to Lieutenant Commander Gott, and obviously he's been in the news a fair bit recently.
But, he has.
But he tells me you were in a beer tent in Caldrose when somebody patted you on the shoulder.
We had... we were doing... a static display with a Seeking aircraft on the day, and there's two of us who are still affiliated to Historic Flight. But that particular day we were the Seeking, and we'd wrapped up our display right at the end of the day. Chris had taxied out in the Fury to go and do his display, and as he went past, we all sort of waved at him, because we had the beer work had finished, so we had a handful of beer, and he waved and off he went. And of course, you know,
the rest is history.
Rest is history, as they say. Yeah.
And what was that day like there? We all saw it on the news, which sometimes can be a little misleading.
Yeah, it was. We were all chatting, and there's lots of people in the vicinity, and the aeroplane was doing its display, which we've all seen before.
Yeah,
and it was just one of the odd things that was said at the time, and the guys, it was a bunch of guys stood next to us, and they said, "Oh, look, the Seafarer has got its smokes on." And I said to a colleague, "He don't do smokes." And we looked up, and there's this stream of white vapour at the side of the aircraft, and you kind of know that there's an engine problem. We didn't know the extent of the problem at the time, but you kind of know there's something wrong. And then, like you say, the rest is history.
Yeah.
And we could see the aircraft in the sky. We saw the gear come down. And then the gear go up again, and we thought, he's doing that obviously for drag, because the aeroplane we didn't know what he was going through at the time. And then when he came to do the landing, he came over the boundary fence of Culross Airfield, and the gear was still up. And we all, the gear's up. And as the gear came down, and we then saw, he's okay, he's on the runway.
Yeah.
Little did we know that when the gear collapsed on the as he touched onto the runway. And then we saw Goatee go past in the distance, sort of bouncing along, and it was just surreal. And this is him.
Yeah.
And this almighty crump as the propeller hit the ground.
Yeah.
Pretty what you call it, you know.
But it's good news now. We're going to see the aircraft back hopefully soon after the investigation.
Yeah, it's all been done apparently. And as I say, I'm not an engineer, so I don't understand the how they do it. But it's gone back to North Wielders, so I believe, and to be refurnished. And obviously, she'll fly again.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And what about your role with the historic flight and the Royal Navy?
I served for a long, long time now.
Yeah. Probably, how long have you served for?
I joined the Navy in 1970, August 1970. So it's a full-on career.
Yeah.
And I've been a reservist, part of the R&R Reserve, since 1994. And I'm currently on what they call an FTRS contract, which is a full-time reserve contract.
Yeah.
So, and that takes me to January 2017.
Right.
With the Wildcat Squadron. And obviously, if I'm fit to fly, I'll continue with the flight if they still want me to fly on the Swordfish.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for joining us, but also thank you very much for your service.
It's a very great pleasure. Thank you.
Now, following the Swordfish display, one of the fantastic attendees at the show today is a Mr. Bryn Vaughan, who I spoke to earlier. Now, Mr. Vaughan is 95. I incorrectly suggested he was 92 in this interview. So have a little listen to what Bryn has to say about coming to Yeovilton when it first opened 75 years ago. I'm with Bryn Vaughan, and Bryn is one of the very few people who remember this air station 75 years ago. Bryn, tell me a little bit about what was the station like then? What was HMS Heron like all that time ago?
Well, it was a brand new station.
Yeah.
We were the first fleet air personnel to arrive here, August 1940.
Yep.
Hardly any aircraft. We had a couple of Swordfish, skewers, and rocks, but they were pretty ancient old aircraft.
Yeah.
And
my dad flew in a couple of skewers, I think. What were they like?
Well, they were kind of. Well, can I explain them? The radial engines. They're pretty big for a radial. I don't remember if they did fly while I was here.
Right. And what was your role when you were here? What did you do?
I was an engine fitter.
Yeah.
We looked after the engines, such as we did up there. The old Swordfish was our favourite aircraft because they did fly.
And, okay.
And we're looking forward to seeing the Swordfish fly very soon, today at Yeovilton. What memories do you have of the Swordfish?
Well, when I went out to Jamaica, there was another new station being built called the Palisades, and we had Swordfish out there. And I flew in it, because if we worked on an aircraft, the pilot wouldn't mind if we
flight.
We used to go up with those Swordfish. Flew around Jamaica a bit.
Yeah. Then, did you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed them in the old Swordfish. Yeah. Then we did it. I flew a few times out in Egypt.
Okay.
We were in Alexandria.
Yes.
We still had Seafires then, but we still had the old Swordfish, and I went up a few times. Just going around and about. Yeah.
Did you ever fly the Swordfish in anywhere that was cold, or was it always hot when you flew it?
Oh, no, it's always hot. Out in Jamaica
and Egypt.
Yeah,
my dad always flew where it was cold.
Because of open cockpits.
And he said the biggest problem was they gave you gloves, but you couldn't write, because the wind was blowing your pen and your paper and everything like that. What were the engines like to work on?
Well, they're pretty solid. They're good engines. We didn't have much problems with them.
Yeah.
We just checked them all.
Yeah.
The only thing was to start the engines. You had an inertia, And if the pilot missed it, he wanted to kill him, you know.
Yeah. Because it meant a lot of work for to wind it all up again. Yeah, that's right. I've heard those stories. Yeah. I finished reading a book recently about the Swordfish, and I learned an awful lot more about it. What are your favourite memories of your time serving with the Fleet Air Arm?
I enjoyed, in a way, wherever we were. We were a lot of youngsters.
Yeah.
And we had about the same age. And wherever we were, we had to make our own fun, you know. Because in Yeovil, the first time I was in Yeovil, they didn't have any playing fields or anything. I don't know if they still have, you know.
Yeah.
So we had to make and do whatever.
You had to make do.
But on board the ship, we should have deck hockey.
Yeah. And what ships did you serve on?
First of all, the first one I was on the Rodney.
Yep.
We were going to, we were going to a place called Palisades.
Yeah.
We didn't know where it was.
Yeah.
I was then left. The first time I was in Yeovilton, there were three of us, and we went up back to Daedalus. Then we got on a train, and we finished up in Greenock.
Yeah.
And we boarded the Rodney.
Okay.
And we were only passengers. And we were going to this place called Palisades. We thought it was somewhere out in the Med, you know. It sounded like a Greek word. Anyway, we were aboard Rodney. We were about 2 days out there, when we were told that the hood had been sunk.
Yeah.
And there's a ship called Bismarck. Well, perhaps you know more about it than I do.
I know. It's an interesting story. challenging times, not the greatest times at all. You're here at Yeovilton. What are you looking forward to seeing today?
Well, I'm in a wheelchair. I can't walk a bit. And I've got my daughter pushing me around in a wheelchair. And I shall go wherever she wants to go.
Well, we hope you enjoy the flying display today. And thank you very much for your service and your time with us today.
Oh, well, I wish there would never be a war.
No.
So senseless wars. But I must admit, I did. I made some great friends, and we went and seen some nice places and all that.
Yeah.
But most of it, the friendship we We held reunion once in Birmingham.
Yeah.
We had about 7 reunions over the years.
Yeah.
That was a great meeting.
My father always said it was the comradeship.
Yeah.
That was the greatest thing that he found in the Fleet Air Arm and the Navy.
We had, you know, lads from Scousers and up in Newcastle. We couldn't understand what they were saying.
still can't.
The Scots, there was I'm Welsh, and they couldn't understand me.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah, my pleasure. Yeah.
This is a message for wives and girlfriends of aircraft enthusiasts. Ladies, we all know your other half has got far too many aviation books and magazines, cluttering up far too much space. So here is a brilliant solution. Encourage him to read The Aviation Historian. You see, it's a journal, a sort of cross between a magazine and a book. So it combines the two, and it's compact format, a bit like National Geographic, so it takes up less space. And it's quarterly, not monthly, so it takes up even less space still. And of course, it will keep him happily occupied for ages. It's not in the shops, so check the website, theaviationhistorian.com, and give yourself some space at last.
Now, with the air show season ploughing on here in the UK, I got the chance to speak to John Perriam, who is the press officer for the forthcoming Shoreham Air Show. Before we talked about the show, I was intrigued to hear about John's aviation background. I'm joined by John Perriam, who is the press officer for the Royal Air Force Association's Shoreham Air Show. John, welcome to Extended.
Thank you. Very kind of you. Look forward to talking to you all.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the phone. Apologies to those who may be hearing a little bit of crackle on the line, because we are talking over a telephone line today. But John, we want to talk about the Shoreham Air Show, but I'm intrigued by your aviation background and heritage. You've been in the industry for a long time, and you've got some intriguing stories to tell. Tell me a little bit about how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, initially I wanted to be a journalist, went to work for the Kent Messenger at Maidstone, and sadly that didn't work out too well for me. The mayor of Maidstone died, and I put the mayoress that died, so that's a short-lived career. But I eventually then moved to London and went to work for Kodak, where I worked in their film unit and learned a great deal about the photography. In fact, was taught by the best. After a while, I came out of London and went back home, and I got a job at Lydd Airport in Kent, where they had the Bristol freighters and the Carvairs.
Yeah, I remember them.
And I did load sheets for 7 years, sitting in an office in a tunnel where the cars were brought in, and we had a round plastic disc with a China graph pencil, and on a board was the weight of the cars. So we would look along the line and say, a Mini weighed so much, a Rolls-Royce weighed so much, work it all out and give it to drivers who would then put them onto the aircraft.
Right, okay.
Now, in those days, there were sort of sometimes 100-something turnarounds a day at Lydd. It was a busy airfield. It's only 20 minutes to Le Touquet or Calais. Of course, it was a hideaway airfield. You know, a lot of celebrities crept through that way. But amusing stories, you know, we used to get the car number plates confused sometimes. And I remember a pilot, George Livingston, coming in. He had a pub on Romney Marsh. And he walked into the load sheet office and said, who did my so-and-so load sheet? You see, I said, I do. He said, I've never been so close to sheep in a field when I took off as I did then. And I got them. Car number plates switched, and as a result, the aircraft was rather balanced towards nose.
Right, okay, I get it. Important role.
Yeah, and then another time I got the numbers twisted, and the car that went to Bâle should have gone to Geneva, and the passengers went on the opposite aircraft.
Oh dear.
Is what aviation was about. I mean, it was fun. And a lot of those pilots went on to work for Laker and the first 111s. So it was a lovely little era.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very different.
Now, you have also in your repertoire of stories a very intriguing one about the Red Arrows and Brighton. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I was a member of Shoreham Lifeboat Crew for over 20 years. In fact, I was on the lifeboat yesterday, went out for a trip. The Reds, it was the first ever public display of the new Hawk. And they were based at Biggin for that weekend. They came down and did a display at Brighton. And four of us went down on a crew member's private boat. And we positioned ourselves just to the west of the pier. And the Reds came in and carried on with their display perfectly. But in those days, the limit height-wise was only about 30 feet.
Wow.
And unknown to us and to the pilot, who then was the squadron leader, Steve Johnson, he flew the Singletons opposite Richard Thomas. A yacht sailed into the flight path with no sails, just the mast. So Steve flew along, clipped the top of the mast and took about 10, 12 inches off it, but he tore his flap. The aircraft went over the pier. He ejected, and the aircraft crashed into the sea the other side of the pier, and we rescued him. He was fine, just a slight cut to the head. One of those rarities that, had it gone wrong, the aircraft could have gone into the town.
Yeah.
You could write a book about it. The other aircraft with Richard, rumour has it, he carried on down the seafront, turned up Grand Avenue in Hove, and almost took some aerials off one of the hotel rooms on the we got Steve ashore. He had a check over and was absolutely fine. We remained friends ever since that day, and I've had close links to the Reds, particularly for the following 3 years after that. I met up with them a lot.
Right, okay.
Lovely.
And you talk about stories there. A lot of this is captured in your book, Shelley, The Lifeboat Labrador.
Yeah, I don't know why I did it. I wrote a book, and basically the idea is my life and my Labrador's life around a working lifeboat station. We got him as a puppy in Southwold, and then eventually I moved down to Sussex, where I joined the Shoreham crew. So it's antidotes based around the crew, the rescues, the social scene. But my dog was my left right hand and was always with me down the boathouse. So it's fun stories relating to aviation, lifeboats, and, of course, a lovable Labrador.
Right, okay. And just before we leave some of your stories, we talked very briefly photography earlier. I know you're still a very keen photographer. You're still very much in the camp of using celluloid and film. Why is that?
I don't know what it is. I just love the texture of it. When I see my images published, and I get a lot of features in magazines, there's just something about the colour saturation. Also, don't get me wrong here, I think digital makes one lazy. I can go to an event, say an air show, and I can stand next to a photographer, an aircraft will go down the display line. He keeps his finger on the shutter, and all you hear is boom. With me, I will follow the aircraft and only take one photograph. So I am composing the image and looking for the right shot. And I think digital makes one lazy. You'll probably get a few letters after this, but I am sorry about it. And I just love composing a photograph. There's just something about using Nikon F5s, they're workhorses, they're heavy cameras. I've had them covered in salt water on lifeboats. You just wash them down. They're workhorses. No problems with them whatsoever.
Right, okay. Well, hopefully we'll get to see some of your photography in the coming weeks and months. Yeah. But let's get over to the air show, John, and talk a little bit about that. Tell us about the Shoreham Air Show. I've got to be honest, I don't know too much about it.
It started 25 years ago when Don Bean, they formed a RAFA branch in Shoreham, small one, and Don Bean met up with the late Peter Eager, both sadly have passed away now, and they decided to have a small fete in the corner of the airfield. And as it happened that day, the BBMF was nearby, and they heard about the small RAFA fete and flew over the airfield. They raised then £1,300, which they donated to RAFA.
And that's the Royal Air Force Association.
Yeah, Royal Air Force's Association. They then decided to have another one the next year, and it grew and grew. And so last year was our 25th air show, and we now handed over last year well in excess of over 220,000 from last year's show.
Wow.
And 4 weeks ago, we had a symbolic cheque presentation to the president of RAFA, Sir Dusty Miller, and we handed over a symbolic cheque of £2 million. So Shoreham Air Show has now given RAFA £2 million from 25 air shows. It's a record unequaled by any other air show in the world.
Well, John, tell me then what we can look forward to in this year's show. 22nd and 23rd of August,
yeah,
about 5 or 6 weeks away.
I think with what Shoreham is all about is one thing. It's a family show. It's not like going to a very large air show. We have about 30,000 a day. But the flying is staggering. It's 6 hours, over 50 aircraft. But we have now got a name as being a warbirds display and probably the best outside Duxford.
And this year's focus is very much the Battle of Britain, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got the Battle of Britain this year. We have the airfield attack and scramble, which features a lot of aircraft all in the air together. And this is put together, I can't say the word choreographed, that's right, yeah, put together by John Romaine, and he coordinates this entire display. It lasts just under 40 minutes, and the airfield is literally attacked from all directions with ME-108s, 9 Spitfires, Hurricanes chasing them off, Dakotas coming through, Lancasters. We've even got more German aircraft come. A Junkers coming in this year, but the whole airfield is putting it bluntly, blown to smithereens with pyrotechnics. And of course, we have a lot of ground support lookalikes on the ground. We then have, of course, the fast jets, Eurofighter, Hunter, Vulcan. It is the penultimate Vulcan display Shoreham this year, and of course, sadly, the Vulcan will never be seen again.
Yeah.
That's on the Sunday. Got the Swordfish, Jet Provost. Rod Dean is a brilliant display director. You interviewed him recently, and of course, he's from Farnborough. He knows what aviation is all about. So it's 6 hours of solid aviation at perhaps, I might say, one of the closest runway lines to the public, and also the backdrop of Lancing College and the Sussex Downs.
Yeah, that is very picturesque. It's very picturesque, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. I also notice in the list of fly-in, the Tiger Nines as well.
Yeah.
A previous guest of ours, Amanda Harrison, a very good friend of the show, flies for them. I've not seen them, so that will be intriguing.
Yeah, it's attracted a lot of interest. We've had them a couple of years now. It's quite an amazing sight to see 9 Tiger Moths coming in from Goodwood. They normally base at Goodwood due to crosswinds and the small access there. But coming in over the Downs, 9 Tiger Moths. And their display is quite something now. It's a slower version of the Red Arrows with 9 Tiger Moths. And of course, it links well in with the World War One display. We get the Tiger Moth display, the World War One, the airfield attack and scramble. Then we bring in the American Air Force with Sally B, and there are a few more American aircraft coming in.
Yeah, you got some Curtis Hawks, War
Curtis
Hawks,
theme,
Kitty Hawks.
Yeah.
And one that also jumped out at me was the T-28 Fennec. Not seen that display, so that will be interesting for some of those.
Well, I think a lot of people hadn't seen that. This is where Rod is brilliant. He has contacts that others don't have, being a display pilot himself. So he's bringing in stuff that we hadn't seen before. I think Aeroplane Magazine nominated us last year as the best family air show for a complete diversification of display aircraft.
Well, John, tell us how we can find out a little bit more about the air show, when it is, where it is, website and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the air show website is www.shoreandairshow.co.uk. It's on the coast between Brighton and Worthing. It's on the 22nd and 23rd of August, Saturday and Sunday. Touch wood, the weather's normally good that time of the year. I mentioned the backdrop, marvellous. Access to and from the airfield is good, although I have to be truthful, we only have the Vulcan on the Sunday and the Eurofighter. So right. Already we are slightly worrying about the amount of traffic that could arise on the Sunday.
Okay.
Our advice for both days is to sort of get in
early.
Yeah, gate time 8:30, but sometimes we open a bit earlier.
Yeah, and a good static display as
Brilliant
well.
Brilliant static. Yeah, a lot of them. We run our show with Bournemouth. So what happens is Bournemouth base the fast jets down their end. We base the more warbird types our end. So we do a sort of shuttle between us. So the Eurofighter will display at Bournemouth and come along and slot into us, whilst some of the Spits and Hurricanes will leave us and go down and coordinate. It works very well. Two different catchment areas, two different types of display over the same weekend. It doesn't seem to affect anything at all.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, listen, we love to hear from people like yourself, John. Thank you very much for taking a bit of time out to come onto the show to talk to us. And very, very good luck to you and Rod for the air show next month.
Yeah, can I just add one quick thing? It's very important to realise that Shoreham Air Show is run totally by volunteers. You know, no one gets paid. We all do it out of kindness of our heart. And over that weekend, more people come in and support it, from air cadets to parking cars, you name it. It's a totally volunteering type of event. And I think that's what keeps it as it's a carnival. The pilots actually say to us, Vic Norman of Brightling, he reckons it's the best air show in the world. He's never missed one. And he loves it. And he's going to be our patron this year.
Excellent. And all the money goes to the charity, of
Every
course, which is a
after
fantastic.
The costings, which are getting higher and higher and higher. But we will count. Rafa gets every penny we make.
Excellent. John, thank you very much for all the work and effort that you put into to helping that air show.
My pleasure.
And let's hope it's a big success.
Cheers. Thanks a million.
Now, since last week, we've also been listed in another top listing, and that is the Airport Spotting Guide's top 10 aviation podcasts to listen to. So we'll put a link in our show notes to that, and thank you to the team at Airport Spotting for that recommendation. Also, before we go, please remember that we've been listed for a UK podcast award and would like to ask you to vote for us. Without your nominations, we won't have sufficient support to get into the final nominations. So please visit our page on the UK podcast directory and vote for Extended. If you like what you hear from us on this programme, it'd be great to see you all voting for us. It takes less than a minute of your time.
Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Okay, so we're coming to the end of the day, about three quarters of the way through the display, Gareth. We're going to sign off shortly because we want to see the French perform. What have you liked so far today?
Just think it's been a really good overall display, a real nice mixture of UK military, foreign military, you know, warbirds, right through to the new, you know, tilt rotor to the newest to the new, and when you've got that sort of variety, there's kind of not much to argue about, really.
It's been a great day, and she's having a cup of tea over in the corner now. We'd like to thank Tracy Clemson, the PR officer here at Yeovilton, as well. We'd also like to thank Eventfire Solutions, White Hearts, and Peter Dixon for their contributions and support for Extended. Now, you can find Extended on Stitcher.com, UKpodcast.com, the Pod Directory, and of course iTunes now. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme's produced with a Creative Commons licence. Gareth, where can we find you online these days?
It's Gareth_Stringer on Twitter, and everything for GAR is at globalaviationresource.com.
It's been a long day. It's been a good day.
It's been a long 2 days.
Yeah. I was here on Thursday, you were here yesterday, I think we've covered it now.
It's good to see you again, though. We must try and get one with all three of us in the same place at the same time.
You never know. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at XTP Media. And also you can find us on Facebook as well. So, the arrival of the music is goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Thanks for listening. See you soon.
And it's goodbye from Air Day 2015. And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency, Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The Super Eton Darts departing, and the Rafales are just about to depart now.
This is XTP Media.